Okay, so we'll call the meeting to order. I would like to start by acknowledging with much gratitude that this meeting is being held on the traditional and unceded territory of the Coast Salish people, and in particular the Qualicum First Nation. So, we need adoption of the agenda. Do we have a mover?
I move we adopt the agenda.
Okay, Doug. David. And seconded, all those in favor? Perfect. Thank you. Approval of the minutes from the last meeting.
I have one correction.
Okay.
I wasn't at the May 9th meeting.
Okay.
So I did send my regrets, but I'm showing as being present, so.
Okay.
That should be changed.
Great. We can update that too. That's an easy one.
Yep.
Thank you, Karen. So we'll approve the minutes as amended then.
Cynthia seconded.
Okay. Oh, Doug seconded. All those in favor? Okay. Looks like everybody carried unanimously. Business arising from the minutes. So a half-day facilitated workshop to prioritize climate change actions be resourced for a cost of up to $1,000 and occur in the fall of 2023. So I think the second bullet talks about a possible facilitator. So perhaps I can get Luke to speak to that and give us an update on possibilities.
Sure. So at the last meeting, we talked about the concept behind getting a facilitator and doing a half-day workshop. And we said we would do a little bit of research into potential facilitators, report back at this meeting, and maybe get some clarity to actually start planning this for the fall. So we put out some feelers. Councilor Shakina both reached out to contacts in various organizations, and this was the list of candidates that we came up with, and I just wanted a chance to speak briefly to a few of them. So the first one there, Mount Aerosmith Fire Biosphere Reserve. You're probably all familiar with the work they do. They do a lot around ecosystem planning and such. Graham Tikaki offered to facilitate the session for free, and he said that if the town wanted to, he would facilitate for free, and then the money would be to maybe hire a student to do some background work in preparation for the meeting. So he would be the facilitator, not the subject matter expert. But he would be able to facilitate that. So that's one option to consider. WCS is Whistler Center for Sustainability. They're sort of provincial leader in the climate adaptation and mitigation field. They're also not on the island, and when we reached out, they were certainly open to the concept and would be able to do it within the price range if they were here, but they're not. So the only way they could possibly deliver a half-day workshop would be that it would have to coincide with some other work that they're doing on the island, and currently they don't have a specific project plan. So if we're willing to wait, they could be an option. They're very qualified subject matter experts and facilitators, but the timing would be, left to the winds of fate of when they would make it over. Councillor Jen Mailer, she was suggested, I believe it was through Councillor Skipsy, and I don't have much more background on that. Then there's two other names on here that I also don't have as much information on. I am familiar with Evan Peterson through work in a totally different field. So I don't think he's necessarily a subject matter expert, but I'm sure he'd be very qualified to facilitate effectively if we wanted to pursue it. And I'm sure as a compliment to who is facilitating the meeting, it's a question of what exactly we're intending to get out of the meeting. And this came up a lot in the discussions with the gentleman from Whistler Center for Sustainability. Because they do a lot of this frequently, and they're familiar with the wide range of things you can talk about in a climate change workshop, they wanted some specificity, like, well, what exactly do you want out of the meeting? What are you hoping to accomplish? And I did, leave that conversation with the sense that we really need to hone in on something, or it's not going to be productive. And so they actually suggest that we wanted to talk with them further to help refine the scope. We can do that even if we don't hire them. They're very, very, you know, good people that are in it for the right reason. So, but we should talk about it. So those are the two discussion points I'd like to float at the table today. You know, one is whether any of these names or concepts pique your interest. And secondly, if we could get some more clarity on the intention of the workshop, I think we'd be further ahead in terms of making the time productive.
Good. Thank you. Does anybody, we'll start with maybe the names, and if anybody has any thoughts or any preferences or any ideas on that.
Well, the first guy sounds like the best option to me. Certainly cost-effective and available and familiar with the area.
I will add that Graham was also one of the stakeholders that contributed to the climate change adaptation plan. He was at that table through that process. So, I mean, he's not totally unfamiliar with where we've been or, you know, that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very familiar with our area.
Yeah.
And it would seem logical to kind of work with the biosphere as well, because we are part of that larger area as well. Maybe that lends a certain bias to the conversation. I don't know, but in many ways it makes sense.
Greg or Karen, do you have any thoughts?
I don't have anything that hasn't sort of already been said. I tend to lean towards him as well, although, you know, I say quite frankly, I don't know any of these people, so I don't have a personal familiarity with any of them. But certainly his local knowledge would be valuable for us, I think.
Greg, do you have any thoughts before I ask?
Not too many, actually.
Yeah?
I don't know any of these people either. I do think David made a pretty good point there, saying working with the biosphere has some benefits and kind of makes sense. But beyond that, I haven't really got anything to add.
Doug?
Well, it really comes down to the question of if facilitating is a skill in itself, independent of the subject matter, and unfortunately, I don't know any of these people, whether they have that skill or not, but I guess if Graham is putting himself forward, then we have to have some confidence that he believes he has that skill.
Yeah.
Maybe some trust that he would be able to.
Yeah.
Done a lot of work with local organizations, agencies, which are in some way associated with the biosphere. In working with groups, such as stewardship groups and so on and so forth. So he's got a lot of experience in the sense that, sort of working with a group and bringing things together. Other than that, I can't say it.
Do you know, like, what his credentials are? Like, I know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he had a fine degree. And he kept them with the university and just stayed with the biosphere.
Well, at one point it just occurred to me is if we do this workshop and we think, well, that was great, but we didn't get through all the work, if we've spent the whole budget, then we're going to have to go back to council and ask for more. But if we've got free facilitation,
mm-hmm.
we can always ask Graham, are you up for another session in a month or two? So that could be a big advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was going to share that I think another advantage is that, you know, because he has the resources of students available to us, that you know, we could probably get some localized research in preparation for the meeting that we wouldn't get out of any of these other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
The cost of just bringing them here would be such that we, you know, all the money would go towards the facilitation, not much towards background research or prep. So that's in my mind, is a real advantage to having a facilitator for free, because then you pay for the other stuff, which we wouldn't otherwise get.
And his boots are already on the ground.
So we, yeah. And the lowest carbon footprint to get him from there to here.
Well, that's stupid.
He did. Well, he does drive a tank.
Oh, okay.
But depending on how the conversation goes with regard to clarity of intention and our goals and objectives and whatnot, what was I going to say with that? Sorry, it's gone.
Too busy, Anne.
Too busy. What was I going to say about Graham? Oh, maybe they could, you know, do some research into perhaps we're looking at best practices, or perhaps we're looking at what's been successful elsewhere, or, you know, maybe we could hone in on what it is that we would like to know, right? Yeah.
Would it be reasonable with that $1,000 that council sets aside, if we don't use it exactly for a facilitator, that we use it a little bit differently? Would that be pushing things?
Got. In what way?
Like you said, other student use research.
Oh, yeah, I think that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Obviously focused on the purpose, but yeah. Not in that exact way.
Yeah, he has Master of Community Planning with BIU.
Yeah.
He's graduated, so. And his other degree is in geoscience.
Hmm. Yeah.
So I think he's pretty well qualified.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Well, can we suggest then that we ask the staff to talk to him and see if you can set it up? Is that next step?
Okay. Do you want to make a motion?
I move that the committee asks for staff to communicate with Graham and see if we can set him up to do the facilitation for me.
Is that a seconder?
Second.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Perfect. Okay. All those in favor? Okay. Great. Unanimous. Excellent. Now to the second part of that question, or the thing, was clarity on intention. So what is it that we're hoping to get out of this workshop? What would be the best case scenario? And I know we talked a little bit last time, I think, about perhaps some short-term wins and maybe a long-term vision. Any thoughts?
Well, one of our home assignments was to review the Saanich plan. And, I mean, that is a pretty grand objective to come up with an entire plan like that. But I guess I had understood that we would perhaps at this meeting use that as a basis for the discussion, because they've outlined a number of issue areas, and we could maybe narrow down the kinds of things that would be most relevant for Qualicum Beach, using that as a framework.
Yeah. Has everybody had a chance to look at the District of Saanich?
Most of it.
It's a big document. I didn't get all the way through it already.
No.
But I did look at it. But I think from what I've seen so far, I thought it was really well done.
Very thorough, yeah. Very well laid out.
Yeah. I got sidetracked because they had a little tool that you could go and estimate your carbon footprint. I don't know if anybody did that, but yeah, I thought it was interesting. Some of the tools that were attached to this. I know also, too, from a previous meeting, I think Doug threw it out there. There was a number of different ways of looking at what the town could do, right? So whether it's regulations, I found the four things, regulations, incentives, advocacy, and awareness. And I think they look at some of those things. What are the things that they can do?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm thinking it depends what we want, whether we want to, you know, sort of from the drawing board create our own document, which I don't think is really necessary. I mean, why reinvent the wheel when you've got a community which in many respects is similar to ours? Why not sort of look at that as a good, as a sort of a good starting point and maybe, use that format, maybe not entirely, but sort of to be going on with. And I'm thinking also, do we want, how immediate an impact do we want to make? I mean, if we're looking at, getting some quick, quote unquote, wins, maybe we need to look at, first of all, sort of low-hanging fruit. I mean, the two things they identified as the biggest issues as far as greenhouse gases are transport and building.
Yeah.
Building structures.
Consistent.
And I would think that would be much the same as here. So maybe that's something that we could concentrate on. That's also something that, if I may be wrong, but I'm assuming that the town has much more influence and control over, sort of, in terms of local measures without having to go to bigger government and deal with ministries and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And I guess an added benefit would be that if we're really seeking to engage the community, if the town can demonstrate quite sort of, you know, quite graphically the fact that there are certain these fairly easy things to be done, and these are some things we all have already done, you know, that the train is already on the track, and we just need to keep it, you know, just keep it going. Maybe that's easier to bring people along. I don't know, but I'm suspecting it's oh, okay, you know, this is possible, this is possible, this is possible.
Yeah, build on what's already in.
Yeah.
And I, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is this is meant to focus more around mitigation. Correct. The climate change adaptation plan was more around adaptation, and our task was, I think, to around climate mitigation actions. So,
I agree with the last speaker's points about getting the low hanging fruit and also coming up with specific action items that a municipality can undertake as opposed to trying to involve senior levels of government and so on. So that would narrow down the focus as well as you say, focusing on mitigation rather than adaptation.
Yeah. Anyone else want to jump in here? Thoughts? I think at one time we talked about looking at greenhouse gas emissions. There is currently direction, I think, to do a study report on that.
Yes, I do have an update. So the regional district has hired a consultant on behalf of the region to do a lot of the inventory work that we were previously going to do on our own. So I'm thinking that report is coming out probably in August and will be presented to council in September. And it relates to the SEPCO discussion as well, which which I know council is very keen to consider, perhaps, but in a higher level of set code. So
right.
Same consultant report is addressing those issues.
So you can just see again exactly what the focus of this report is going to be?
It is on options for greenhouse gas reduction, but specifically like the low carbon step code and the DC energy step code, and advising on the, you know, potential impacts of selecting higher levels.
So
but there's an inventory project underway as well, you know, simply to report on current community-wide emissions in the region, but broken down by municipality.
So that would, the latter would be an update of the 2010 community energy emissions inventory in effect?
Correct. Different methodology, which is important to note, because I've seen an early draft of the data, and the challenge is that they don't have access to the same information. So when you compare it to 2010 and the current one, there's some strange anomalies that, you know, make it apparent that they don't have access to the same information.
And the other report you were mentioning is going to focus on the building sector.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right. Interesting thing, maybe this is irrelevant, but in the sandwich plan, they presented some data showing that what some people refer to as embodied emissions or material emissions are a very big deal, whereas the step code doesn't even address them. And you could have a building that's inferior on the step code and yet has much lower greenhouse gas total emissions because it's better on the embodied emissions. You know, that's going to be addressed at all?
And so then there's a low-carbon step code as well that has come out recently in the last year. So that has to do with solely with embodied.
Okay.
And so the city of Nanaimo has just adopted that as a standard.
Okay.
And I believe Sandwich did too. So yeah. It probably would have been after that document was developed. Which,
okay. That's encouraging. Thank you.
And then so that addresses things like not being able to have a natural gas hookup.
Right. Well, the thing that I was thinking about particularly was actual material emissions like concrete and high materials that go into the building. So before the people even move in, it's got a big greenhouse gas emission associated with creating the building. Whereas my understanding with step code is largely about operating emissions, that is after you move in.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that's been a huge oversight in most of the estimates on the greenhouse gas emissions and generally climate change. The fact that embodied carbon is released when, for instance, buildings are demolished, and I don't think that's ever been taken into consideration. There's been so much emphasis on building new green buildings that have such low emissions, but the actual consideration of what is entailed in demolishing old buildings has been ignored up until now.
I know the RDN has recently brought in new regulations and guidelines, I believe, around destruction versus deconstruction or whatever it is. With the waste hauler agreements and whatnot. So, but it would be interesting to take a look at that and keep that in mind. I know recently a number of homes, rather than demolishing, they have moved them. That seems to be because of the cost of building these things. That seems to be a trend that there's value in simply relocating.
So, yeah. I think that could be an important part of a sustainability strategy, thinking in terms of adaptive reuse rather than demolish and build new.
So that would be an example of something that could come out of our work, the recommendation to council, is that language about that be put into the OCP or policy somewhere that council would simply consider the impact of demolition and the embodied or material carbon emissions and their destruction when looking at development proposals. I think that would be really, really useful.
Yeah. How much leverage does council have in terms of that process?
When there's development being proposed, mm-hmm. there's a fair bit of leverage. But if you were to, for example, apply for a demolition permit to take out your home tomorrow, the town, we would issue a demolition permit.
Right.
Right. And council wouldn't be involved in that. It's only when there's development approvals requested that's when council gets involved. So your question would be good on this. The town doesn't have as much leverage as Councilor Skip, you know, the regional district with the mandatory store separation regulation that they put in that essentially requires donation cycle now.
Would be the appetite for bringing that forward in the town, do you think?
Which one, then?
The recycling.
Well, then, because the regional district does our solid waste pickup, right, the whole service, we are already a participant.
Oh, okay.
That is in place.
Sorry, would it be possible for the town to have a bylaw whereby, or a policy in the OCP whereby there would be criteria applied to a demolition permit rather than just...
We could investigate. I honestly don't know off the top of my head.
That's a good question.
Good question.
Yeah. The other thing is, I'll just quickly jump in here. The other thing is with the sanitizers, they're not requiring step code 4 or like an advanced step code, but what they're doing is offering incentives instead.
Yeah.
So they are giving like a discount for a building permit if you build to a higher standard. And so I wonder if like a single family that wouldn't necessarily come forward, but maybe if the town could offer an incentive mm-hmm. off, you know, some of the costs, mm-hmm. then perhaps that would be a way to get accomplish the same outcomes.
Yeah.
Can I just jump in here?
Karen?
So I just want to go back to the planning for the facilitated workshop question, like how we are sort of marshaling our ideas and our priorities for that. So if we're getting this report or these two reports, you said, Luke, you thought in August, and they're going to council after that or reasonably quickly after that. Do we wait for that to be presented to council before we have our workshop, or do we get the information from those reports that we can digest it before the work? Like, how can we put that information to use?
That's a really good question. Is there if I jump in and answer?
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think the committee would have a valuable role in maybe recommending something particularly for the step code one, because the consultant will be making a recommendation regarding step code and the zero carbon energy step code. So council would probably value your input on that. So the only caveat to that is that I know council is very keen to have this put in front of them. So if that were the case, we'd have to have this committee room or committee meeting in a pretty timely fashion to, because otherwise council is going to be anxious and want to see the report and make a decision before the committee has a chance to mull it over. So
I was just sort of wondering how we organize that timing with the workshop.
Potentially we could schedule this workshop in September and maybe the council in October, right? So the reports would be out, the committee would have a chance to look at them and maybe make some recommendations.
I think we had penciled in the fall, right, for the workshop. And
right.
If indeed the report was out from the RDN in August, maybe we could get a copy of it and forward it to all of the members of the committee to have a look at. I think it would make sense to have that information prior to going to into the workshop.
And to let the facilitator know that we're reviewing that in advance so that it can guide our discussion, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Marion, did you have something else that you wanted to
jump? I was just going to follow up on your idea of the incentives that it doesn't just have to be incentives in terms of getting a demolition permit or whatever, but there could also be more positive incentives. And from a sustainability perspective, the idea of adaptive reuse of buildings is, you know, much more sustainable than trying to recycle a demolished building in an effective way. And there could be a number of incentives to encourage adaptive reuse of buildings, for instance, allowing a slightly larger floor space ratio or, you know, reduce setbacks, so that kind of thing, if you want to retain the original building and add on or whatever, those kinds of things, or even expedited building permits, that kind of thing.
Now, are people comfortable with looking at transportation? I think David had put out the idea of transportation and building, built environment, as the two topics. Do we want to get into things like food security?
I think so. I mean, food, I don't know. I think there's, when we talked earlier, and I'm sorry I missed the May 9th meeting, but I did get a gist of some of the sort of headings of topics, and I don't think it's a bad idea to consider advocacy initiatives along with legislative initiatives. I mean, when we talk about the jurisdiction of a municipality or a town and how that applies to transportation and building, that's an obvious fit, but we have a role in advocating to senior government and advocating and education with the public, et cetera. So I wouldn't want to see us completely, I know it's only half a day, but I wouldn't want to see us completely abandon that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with Karen on that one. I think it's maybe more a matter of just classifying or categorizing the things and saying this one is something you got to take up with senior government. This is something council can act on directly. This is something we can encourage citizens to do, you know, that sort of thing. Because I think, you know, like what Karen was saying, with each subject area, whether it be transportation or whatever, you're probably going to get into it and find that, council can deal with this part of it. But then there's another part of it here that requires some discussion, lobbying with senior levels of government and that sort of thing. So I don't think we can really rule it out.
And we can let our facilitator know that those things are of concern, and we're aware of those, where the limitations are, but we still want to address them.
Right. Explore our role in those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You have a comment, Doug?
Well, you asked about buildings and transportation as the focus, and yes, I agree that those are the focus. Looking at the 2010 greenhouse gas emissions inventory, it's clear that those are the two big ticket items. One thing that this methodology didn't look at is greenhouse gas emissions from land use change. That is, when you convert, for example, when you convert forests to other lands, it simply doesn't appear on here anywhere. So, but and I don't know how big management is, but I suspect it's not small, or the potential, at least, as we move forward. If you look at the map of Qualicum Beach, there's at least 100 hectares of mature forests within our boundaries. If that were converted to other land uses, you'd be talking many, many thousand tons, tens of thousands of tons of CO2 emissions from that. So I wouldn't want not to completely ignore that potential source of emissions also in the deliberations. I know it's a little bit harder to get a hold of because we don't have the same data that we have here, and there's not as much information for us to work with. But at least we should make a start at getting it on the radar for council and for the community. I guess the other thing was about the distinction between mitigation and adaptation. Food security is probably in some ways the biggest impact that climate change is going to have on the humankind, really. If you can't find enough food to eat, things are pretty bad. But it's more an adaptation issue than a mitigation issue, strictly speaking. How are we going to adapt to climate change? So I'm worried that if we could spend 4 hours talking about food security without talking, and then we wouldn't have talked about mitigation. So we did talk about it a little bit in the committee's response to the adaptation plan, I think.
Yeah,
we did comment on it, yeah. So I mean, that's something we'll circle back to in the future. Perhaps.
Yeah, I think there was a motion that came from council to ask the committee to consider it, so we could do it as a separate matter.
Yeah, how would other people on the committee feel about it? Because it's such a big item.
Well, if we use the Spanish plan as a framework, definitely food security was one of the issues. It was transportation, mobility, building, food security, and then ecology. So that pretty well covers those two areas, Doug, that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And adding them to the transportation and building. It seems to me that it would be hard to get away from those four big areas.
The one thing I think about this document, though, was it was a mixture of mitigation and adaptation, perhaps.
That was my point. That was specifically mitigation and adaptation plan, whereas the way Quality and Beach is structured the process is they had an adaptation plan, we were asked to comment on it, and now we can ask to comment on mitigation.
Yeah.
So those two things would kind of separate for us by the way council approached it.
But food production and the kinds of food we eat are part of the whole way we deal with mitigation. I mean, it's not just transportation and building. It's and when you read like Project Drawdown, for example, that the way food is produced and not just transported but produced and the kinds of food people increasingly all over the world eat is directly related to actual, you know, greenhouse gas emissions and climate change issues at that level of mitigation, not just as an adaptive thing. So I don't see how I mean there's admittedly it's a different kind of thing for a town like Quality Beach to talk about those things because you're essentially trying to educate people about the impact of what they eat on the impact of that on climate change. But I don't think it's something we should shy away from doing.
I mean, there's one obvious way that food security or threats to food security could be mitigated, and that's through protecting agricultural land. And that way, the transportation of food, great distances, is alleviated, and as well as having more food security.
Yeah, that's a tough one. How much focus to put on it when we're talking about the other thing?
Well Karen, what Karen said about the diet people have, obviously, Town of Quality and Beach doesn't have any legislative tools to make people eat something.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
So we can eat and advocacy and awareness for them.
Right.
But yeah, I agree. We shouldn't shy away from it. He's absolutely right. It's very important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't want to see, as the committee's mandate is considered, I wouldn't want to see us embark on something that the town has budgeted for us to talk about. And limit our discussion to only things that we can directly legislate on, which of course we can't legislate how people eat, but that doesn't mean that the advocacy and awareness part of it isn't something that the town and the citizens of the town should know that we are, you know, talking about and thinking about and engaging on.
Right. Well, and if we even look further on our agenda, there's a motion there for food security, right? And that the terms of reference for our committee be amended to include food security. So,
right.
Yeah. Doug?
Well, I'm still looking ahead. Oh.
Go ahead, Greg.
I was just saying, I was looking ahead in the agenda there as well.
Yeah.
But, I noticed what you just said is true. But it also refers to a food action plan, strategic initiative for scheduled for 2026. I'm just wondering how that would interact with what we're proposing to do here.
Well, that's a good point.
Oh, are you saying me? well, I think the way that the food action plan is done would likely very dependent on how our official community plan review goes. There's a lot between now and 2026 that would influence that particular plan. So I think we'd be taking a wild guess if we wanted to guess what's in that plan. We're a few years off. But I just want to follow up on the half-day workshop, because it's food security in that, in or out. Should it be land use, buildings, what's in or out? And I'm realizing that this doesn't have to be the end of the discussion, which came up earlier. So, let's just keep that in mind that this isn't the time when we have one shot at it and we have to wrap the whole package up and tie it up by the end of the day. So if all we want to tackle is building and transportation, because those are the two biggest issues in our community, I think we could spend the whole time on those two and have a really meaningful day. And maybe we want to schedule another event at some point on those other ones. Or if we're think, well, it might go really well, then we just prioritize it. And we say, we have a half day. We're going to start with land use, we're going to start with building and transportation, and if we get to it, we'll address food security, we'll address, these other things. So just wanted to throw that out, to remind everyone that we don't have to cover every issue in the field of climate mitigation within a single day.
Good thing, too.
And maybe just even a brainstorming session around, the types of, what is it that we can regulate or incentivize or advocate, create awareness of communications campaign or whatever, and just have some ideas for those, but doesn't mean we have to go into depth on any of those at this point.
Right.
Yeah. Does that sound logical? Done.
Well, I know several members of the committee said very strongly we want to see at least some tangible, specific items that we can recommend that are doable, and people also voting through. So obviously those concepts need to be front and center. I guess it was also the other stream of, well, let's not forget the big picture and the longer term items. So we could kind of budget our time a little bit around that. Say, okay, let's have a bit of time to make sure that we have the big picture in mind, that we're not leaving out awareness of things. And let's also keep in mind the different levels from legislation to advocacy and awareness. Let's have all that in mind, but then also let's focus on a couple of specific things we want to see coming out of this. At the last meeting, Marion brought up the bike and pedestrian aspects of transportation, and I've been thinking about that a lot since that meeting and keeping my eyes open as I go around town and seeing that there really is room to improve how this town welcomes cyclists and pedestrians and what we do to make that a part. So I'd like to see that be one thing that we talk about within transportation. But I wouldn't want that to be the only thing we talk about, because we know that it's only going to be part of the picture.
Yeah. Well, I think in the Saanich one, there's quite a good breakdown on some of the transportation things that they are going to work on. And also the fact that they use the municipality as the example, right? I think that's really important for the town, the leadership, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That we lead by example.
Yeah.
Yeah. For instance, the town could abandon gas-powered grounds maintenance equipment, possibly rewilding some of the town's public lands and that kind of thing.
Well, I'm sure there's a few people that wouldn't mind seeing the end of gas leaf blowers and whatnot, but yeah, definitely that's one that keeps coming up on the radar.
Well, and we should at least raise the issue of getting off of fossil fuel powered equipment altogether, because remember that the goal, if we're to avoid catastrophic climate change, is not a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, it's zero.
Yeah.
We should be thinking that by sometime before 2050, the town should not own a single fossil fuel powered vehicle. And what's our strategy to get there? So that's a big challenge. But if they're not going to hear it from us, then we're not doing our job.
So that would be part of our conversation, I guess, around transportation.
Yeah.
I think so.
And getting people out of their cars generally. That's the big elephant in the room. How to get people out of their cars. And really, the awful truth is that the only effective way to get people out of their cars is to charge them to park in town. I'm looking at that huge parking lot beside Tosh. Is that town land? Is it, you know, free parking? What if that were pay parking just as a start? And the proceeds went toward putting in bike racks and bike lanes and crosswalks and making the town more pedestrian and bike friendly at the expense of driving your car. Make it real. User pay.
I think one of the challenges we face here in Qualicum Beach is our senior population, and it can be very difficult for people with mobility issues and
to ride a bit, yeah.
So there's that balancing piece as well.
And then there's the whole bus route issue. As you pointed out last meeting, these big lumbering gas powered buses with two people in them going around and around the town. Maybe I know they're a regional concern, but if there could be smaller, more frequent buses that with a more detailed network that could pick up seniors all over the town and take them downtown to shop, that kind of thing. Anyway, to attack transportation, I mean, cars are such a sacred cow, and everybody's going to fight so hard against any effort to get them out of their cars.
Yeah, I hope that during the workshop we can have some kind of that out-of-the-box thinking and maybe some blue sky ideas, big ideas about, you know, what could be possible. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, too, my thinking always comes back to education. And we have several, to my knowledge, residence associations in the town. Plus, we have other influential groups such as Rotary, Provost, and so on and so forth in the town. Is it possible to think in terms of holding kind of educational workshops or information sessions or a to and fro with those groups of people about the issues that, you know, specific issues, like in terms of just what Marion was pointing out, that, you know, this difficulty with the number of cars in town versus the mobility challenges of member people in town. There's got to be a lot of good ideas out there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of ideas, which are probably a little off the charts, but at the same time, you're going to miss the good ones if you're just afraid of getting, you know, some balmy information.
Yeah.
Same time, yeah.
Well, I think the adaptation plan definitely identified different stakeholders, and I think that that's part of the process, right? Is making sure we know who can help us with the various things, and of course, like that would come under awareness, I think, and that was one of the areas that we want to make sure we think about, right? What kind of communication needs to be done? There's something else I thought about there a second ago. Oh, well, it was related to the transit, because I do believe that there is a proposal from the RDN to change some of the transit routes. So it might be good to have that information in advance of our workshop. So perhaps maybe staff could look into...
I think depending on the focus of the workshop, if transportation is one of the main focuses, which I'm picking up that it will be, then I think that would be a reasonable thing for someone to do some research into transit routes, availability, cycling routes, amenities, all that type of stuff. So.
Is that something like our committee members can do? Is that something staff would do, or what?
I think that if we're going to finalize the Fire, then a student could help do some of that work.
Okay, perfect.
Any committee members, absolutely, and any prep for the meeting would be great. You know, once we kind of hone in on the focus, right? So I think that's probably the next step. Like we're heading in a good direction. When we're debating the details, and I think we could just jump in and just pick a few to start with and see where it goes from there.
Do we have a communications person on town staff who could look at, look at ways in which you're contacting the community and look at somehow building or designing a campaign over a period of 2 or 3 years, maybe leading up to the OCP. I guess it's sort of a back doorway to influence in the OCP, but even so.
We do have a communication strategy that's being worked on right now by a consultant. So that's an external resource that is working on something. And then Bernadette Ritter, our illustrious note taker, is also an excellent communicator. You were hoping I would put you on it. But yes, so we do have some communication resources.
Yeah.
I think what you're talking about is like a full-fledged communication strategy around the concept of climate change and adaptation or mitigation. So that would potentially be a different scale of engagement with a consultant, and it might be a recommendation at some point coming up with this.
Yeah, I'd like to see that be part of it for sure. I had a conversation just the other day with Adam Walker, our MLA, and I was, expressing some frustration with some provincial policies on, like, expanding the oil and gas industry, for example. He said, that's not the main thing I'm hearing from the constituents. It's not the main thing people are talking about. They're phoning me up and saying, I can't afford my groceries, or I'm frustrated because I can't get a doctor. And, of course, you can understand that people have those concerns. But he says, if the government is not hearing from the population, from the voters, that we care about climate change, it's hard for the elected officials to make that a priority. So it's kind of like you have to put it out there first to the public, say, look, are you not aware that this is a serious problem? It's a serious public problem.
Create the demand.
Yeah, create the demand in a sense. If I could just carry on with that thought, this book here, The Good War by Seth Klein, everybody familiar with that? Any of you? Basically, he uses the analogy of what happened in Canada during World War II, where we completely modified our entire society and economy. We changed everything overnight, basically, in order to fight a war against fascism. And he said, because it was an emergency, if we took a similar approach to climate change, we could do everything that needs to be done to avoid dangerous climate change, but we would have to have that philosophy of, okay, we have to all pull together and be willing to change everything. But an interesting point is he says, the public wasn't necessarily supportive at the beginning, and the government played two roles. It not only made the changes happen, but it basically communicated to the public the need for these changes.
So the government was not only responding to what the public wanted, the government was leading in the sense of telling the people, here's what we know about how what the problem is and what has to happen. So it argues strongly for governments at all levels to engage in exactly what you were saying, the communications and awareness kind of thing.
Good point. It seems to me that if council were able to come up with some pretty rigorous regulation to try to get people out of their cars, get them to, whatever kinds of points the sustainability committee comes up with and whether council adopts them. And if council were to make those kinds of changes, there would be a lot of opposition. And a necessary part of the strategy would be a whole communication as to why council was taking this step. And the whole climate change awareness could be rolled into that.
Sounds good. Thank you, Marion. Do you think that we have gotten any clarity on our intentions? Like, if we were to try to summarize if Graham is agreeable to coming and helping us, where we're going to go?
I'm going to go on a limb here and suggest what I heard.
Okay.
And just to try to bring some focus and to this. So it sounds like the workshop will be in September following the release of the REM report, and that the workshop will, once again, go on a limb, but I'm focusing on transportation and building, which is a good follow-up from the REM report, and that we would be exploring a communication strategy around the concept of climate change as a potential follow-up in the future, as well as other topics.
And would we be maybe breaking it down by some of the things like regulations and incentives and advocacy and awareness, or control and influence, direct and indirect?
Possibly. I think I would somewhat leave that to discussion with, Paris and Bias Reserve, and they could put their heads together and come up with a game plan. We have a local expert on public engagement. Probably have a lot of experience facilitating too. So, Liz may be able to help Maris Lacarce here in terms of designing an effective half-day workshop.
If we're providing direction and a wish list to this facilitator, I just want to go on the record as saying I would like us to not limit ourselves at the get-go and just say that we are aware that there are other issues besides transportation and buildings that we know we have to deal with, and that if time allows, we certainly want to devote some time to other things, that we know there are immediate things that we might be able to do, but we also know there are big picture things that we need to look at, and I wouldn't want to go into it limiting ourselves at the outset.
Yep, I think that's probably fair. Transportation, buildings, and then time permitting,
mm-hmm.
other, which may include food security, wildfire mitigation, whatever it is.
We need to really look at this. It's just the start of an ongoing process. This is where we're going to start, and then we're going to lead on from there.
Yeah. We also talked about big picture, long-term versus low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Anybody else have any thoughts about direction? Doug?
I was just going to say about that. The distinction between legislation, initiatives, advocacy, whatever, I think the value of that is that if we get into a conversation and we realize this is something the town doesn't have any direct influence over, other than through education and advocacy, it's just that we don't have it just fall off the table. We have a couple of different piles to put it in, so to speak. And at the end of the day, we have a bit of an organized stack of list of things in each of those piles. Not that we necessarily want to focus exclusively on one of them, but we don't get sort of hung up in saying, well, we can't talk about that because the town can't do anything about it. We just say, well, what could we do, at least in terms of awareness and advocacy, if nothing else? But maybe there are specific things.
Which is why I want to leave food in there.
Yeah.
And not just food security, but food.
Right. Food production, as opposed to
food production, yeah.
Okay. You think we're doing okay with that then? We've got a basis. I guess if there's anything else you need, then we can.
So the committee okay with go ahead and start to coordinate that with the shop. It won't be limited exclusively to transportation and housing or transportation and buildings, but that would be the primary focus, and in time allowing, we include other elements as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds
good.
We'll do that.
And hopefully everyone can have a chance if you haven't had a chance to finish going through the Saanich climate plan.
I noticed you've printed it out there.
I know.
Found it hard to read documents online. Are you willing to lend your...
Sure. We can circulate it. We can circulate it for sure. I have a hard time reading online too, so I thought we could make it a...
Yeah, I was going to suggest maybe that if other members of the committee have reading material they'd like to share,
yeah,
the summer reading material, like I was going to say, if anybody wants to borrow this book, I'm happy to lend it. And I have a couple of other resources here that might be of interest. And we all live in Concord Beach. I can deliver it to your house if you want.
That's
clever. Yeah. But, yeah, I'd love to borrow that and then pass it on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm agreeable with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be interested in the Seth Klein book, Doug.
Okay.
List.
You're number one on the list, where do you live?
All of Concord Beach.
Yeah, okay.
I won't make you deliver as well as lend.
Okay, well, we can email about that if you like.
Sure.
Great.
Sounds good. So, number three, I think we've kind of tied that up. Right, we've talked about the possible facilitator and then consider the District of Saanich plan. Recommendations from council. So that was the previous one about what we're doing about mitigation, climate mitigation actions. Then there was number two, which was the motion on food security. So we'll keep that on the agenda for going forward. Does that sound good, Bernadette?
Sure.
We don't lose sight of that.
That's the motion from council.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mayor did ask me about that earlier, as to what the next steps are. So are we just going to carry that forward to the next agenda?
I think so, because
I think it's a
big topic that, you know, we probably, I don't think there's any quick wins on that, right?
I noticed it says the terms of reference be amended. Is that council has to vote on that, right?
Council did vote on it, right?
Well, not
necessarily.
It was referred to the committee for discussion, right?
Oh, okay.
It does say.
Yeah.
And since one loop, this was
so
deferred this and for their future meeting to allow for the committee to discuss the item.
Great, and you did amend it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So it has been amended.
It has been amended.
So we'll talk about it at a future meeting.
Yeah.
So all I was going to say with respect to that is that if the terms of reference still say this committee meets four times a year,
oh, yeah,
it's really not realistic for to add or
no.
to add more things to the whatever is the mandate. And I noticed some other committees like the APC meets much more frequently than that. So if
as
I,
required,
as required.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps we should say that the terms of reference be amended to state four times a year or as required?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So, David, would you be willing to move that and second it? Okay. Did you get that for a minute?
Yes. Can I make a comment that when we were doing the position of the like notice for the youth member, we said meet more regularly when items of discussion have been referred by council for a maximum of one meeting a month or some kind of maximum so that people have some guideline around how often they're meeting. That was the suggestion. I can bring up the wording if you like.
Yeah. Sure. Do you want to bring
it? Yeah, I'll describe it.
Okay. So I think the status of the recommendations to council number 5 is we've already worked on that. That's the workshop. And then adding additional youth members. So council adopted that, supported the motion from the committee. And then maybe under new business, we can just ask if there's any updates on youth positions. And the other thing I was thinking about that is that I don't know how willing the committee is to, how flexible we are about moving dates. Because I wondered if we had it on a Friday, whether some of the Fridays for the future youth would be interested in participating with us. Just a thought.
Friday would be fine with me.
Yep.
Do Fridays work for other members of the committee?
That would be fine with me.
Karen's nodding.
And me.
Oh.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, Greg is a yes? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a possibility too, depending. I don't know, have we received any applications?
We have not.
Okay, so that's a concern, right? So maybe if we can somehow find other ways of including our youth. Because we were looking for more than one.
How do we reach out to you typically to try to widen the pool?
I can provide an update on that. We do a variety of different methods. We email the schools directly. Vancouver Island University has a job employment posting board, so it's essentially a volunteer position. We post it on there, post on social media, and then we send it out via constant contact. Of course, the best way is directly, so if you know someone, to ask them directly, which I have done. I've asked someone, they verbally said that they were going to do it. Maybe they've just gotten busy. Her name is Elena. So we've had an Elena sale. We've had Elena Zaneski, and now we would have an Alina. I don't know. I can't think what her last name is because her mum's got a different last name. Except she goes to KSS.
Okay.
And she's an Alina, and she wants to be, that's exactly what she wants to do, climate change. She wants to be an engineer for climate change. So she's often put forward by her teachers to represent the school, so she's not shy, she's able and capable, and so I'll follow up on her, but if you have any others, then of course the most direct approach is the best approach. And I have that worried for you.
Okay.
So we said regular meetings of the committee will be held on the first Wednesday of January, May, and September of each year, as required, commencing at 3 p.m. Additional meetings may be scheduled to address larger projects or urgent items with a maximum of one meeting per month.
Okay, so do we want to amend the terms of reference then? We had that motion, but can we make it a friendly amendment to change the wording to reflect what was advertised, that it would be with a limit of as required, basically, with a limit of one per month.
I'd be cautious about setting a limit, just because what if we needed to meet 3 days in a row or something?
Yeah. Right.
I think we need to self-manage and not schedule more than one a month, but I would be hesitant to actually put it in terms of reference, only to violate it shortly after because we have some urgent thing we need to deal with. So.
With the aim of having one?
Yeah.
Or something like that? So there's a little bit of, flexibility in the wording?
Estimated time. Estimated.
Yeah. And then we're changing to Fridays from Wednesdays, or are we just going to leave the day open? The day of the week?
For now, that was just sort of a take of the temperature of the room, but then if we need to change it, we can, or... We'll see how the conversation goes with some of our youth and whether even that's, whether the Fridays right. in the future would be willing to come inside and do that. Or I think we need to have those conversations first before we make the changes.
Okay.
Perhaps if we said with an estimate of no more than one meeting per month?
With an estimate.
Yeah.
Or anticipation.
With the expectation, no?
Yeah.
Aim of?
Yeah. We let staff play with that wording.
I think they all mean similar things.
Yes. Okay, so we'll take a vote on it just to make sure it's, so all those
things. David moved, sorry.
David moved and Doug
attended. Okay.
Yeah, and all those in favor? Perfect. Okay. Carries unanimously. Does anybody else have any other new business?
Hayden?
No, we don't generally bring up stuff under new business, but you never know. And then future agenda items of discussion, RDM presentation on water management. I guess we were waiting until Julie?
And she's back now. She's
back
now.
So we'll try to schedule that when we're not...
She's already interviewing on TV. That's where I was like, oh, she's back. I heard her on TV.
So maybe later in the fall?
Yeah.
Because I don't know that... I don't think the committees tend to meet in August, right?
No. Brady, can you reach out to the RDM and see if Julie's starting to come in the fall?
Sure. Field trip findings. I think that was from our trip to see the solar panels, wasn't it? And we haven't really.
Yeah, you had a field trip that I missed last time. That it was tree.
Yeah.
Virtual.
It was a virtual field
trip.
Oh,
okay.
Bob came to us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't see that, so I don't know anything. But that was the last field trip, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
And he did make that presentation to council as well at the last meeting.
That's right. He was in Washington.
So you could.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Done?
I was going to say, that was a very informative presentation and a bit of an eye-opener for me, to be honest. And I wish we'd known more about that when we were reviewing the urban forest plan, because I came away from that with a strong feeling, and this is not a criticism of what Bob was presenting or what the town is doing, which was heroic in terms of all the efforts they're taking to get those trees to live. But it was clear to me that those small street trees are not a climate benefit, that the CO2 emissions associated with making all that plastic material to keep those poor trees alive far outweighs the climate benefit of those trees. And if we want urban trees to be beneficial to the climate, we have to rethink our urban landscapes around that concept of street trees and a little row of small trees along the sidewalk, because all that plastic, I mean, I kind of feel horrified, really. I don't know, did anybody else have feeling about that or thoughts about that?
Yeah.
Well, my other thought was, if we do want to get people out of their cars and act as pedestrians, the streetscapes have to be pedestrian friendly, and trees really help with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I was just making the point that maybe we need to rethink how we have those trees configured. Because I know in some of the other cities, like I was walking around Victoria, that have great big huge street trees. And these are trees that were planted 50 years ago or more. So obviously they weren't using that kind of high-tech installation back in those days. I think the key is they have more than a 4 foot square of soil to grow in. They have more like, each tree has a couple hundred square feet of soil. So maybe we just need to devote more land within our urban landscapes to those street trees. I don't know. That's a thought, and I realize it's not something immediately on our agenda, but.
Does it make any difference if it's recycled plastic? Not really.
Oh,
I just see if it takes it out of the landfill or whatever, right? Maybe.
Yeah.
Not so much.
The more you learn, the more discouraged you get. I was reading that somebody looked at the wastewater coming out of plastic recycling facilities. Well, guess what it's full of?
The plastics.
Plastic.
Yeah. And some photos from that project, if you were interested. Well, not that project. But
another project. Right?
I'll show you just some of the images that came from, we had to remove some trees recently because of the very reason of them getting stuck in our infrastructure. So these are some of the, they were on birch, I think,
was it dogwood aspen or something?
You can see down the water meter,
yeah.
And they're up in here. And then we have another photo of the tree coming out, and it's unbelievably big. Like, that's the person there. And then that infrastructure goes all the way.
Okay.
I'm not seeing pictures.
Oh, I'm not either.
Oh, I'm sharing the screen.
Yeah, but all I've got is icons and descriptions. I don't have photos.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
we did have problems with this lesson.
Yeah. Anyway, we can take your word for it.
Yeah. The root systems. Okay, and then future field trips to explore examples of what a successfully implemented urban forest master plan can do for the community. So I guess we'll just keep that on the list for now and maybe think more about the amount of land that we need to allocate for the trees. And then with that, adjournment. Does anybody want to move adjournment? We done? Karen! We need a seconder? Yeah. Bugs gonna sit. Okay. At 3:20 p.m. So the next meeting can be announced, so that would be gearing up.
Yeah, we're July, so it'd be September.
So
we'll put together details on the workshop and a proposed date, and that very well might be our next meeting.
Okay. Or if we needed to meet in advance for any reason, then we could do that too, probably.